Let me for a moment just set the scene. It's April of 1862, and thousands of enslaved people are walking off the plantations and properties of their former slaveholders. Isn't that hard to visualize? Enslaved people just crossing the threshold of plantations that stretched across the nation's capital, now with a newfound freedom, but without money or resources or a home, still seen as 3/5 of a person. Often when we talk about emancipation, we don't discuss the world that the formerly enslaved were walking into. We don't talk about the ways our government supported the slaveholding class even after emancipation. In the case of D.C., slaveholders were given around $300 for the loss of each slave, which amounts to over $8,000 in modern values. In a conversation organized by the D.C. History Center and the African American Civil War Museum, I spoke to acclaimed historian C.R. Gibbs and prominent lecturer and educator William Jones about the legacy of compensated emancipation in D.C. C.R. Gibbs tells us about the logic behind compensating slaveholders and not the enslaved.
The logic of the time was to only compensate slaveholders, only compensate the owners. That was virtually no thought was given to the people who were directly affected by the institution. We are talking about people that simply were not concerned about people that were still legally 3/5 of a person.
Wow. Even though the enslaved population, they weren't given the opportunity to be compensated, they were given the opportunity to repatriate. They were telling them, you have the opportunity to leave, go to Haiti, go to Liberia, which the U.S. colonized at the time. But according to records, nobody took the opportunity to repatriate. William, can you tell me about why you think no one took that opportunity?
Sure. Well, one of the things to keep in mind when you talk about Black folk not being compensated at that time, if they agreed to leave, they may be given about $100. If they agreed to leave the country. And in today's money, that's approximately like $2,800, okay? So that would be the only way, if any, that they might receive compensation. The reason why so many Black folk found it problematic, and we're talking about all Black people together, we're talking about a very small percentage that actually took them up on their offer across the United States. The reason why they found it problematic was because a lot of people were very skeptical of what the American Colonization Society was doing. And the American Colonization Society, that's the organization that's responsible for taking Africans back to Liberia. And there's a couple of things that are happening here. When it was formed, by this time, we're talking 1800s, you had many Black folk that had been here for so long that they, you know, had lost that connection. And even if they could go back to Africa, they may not necessarily come from that part.
The amazing thing about this is we get a sense of how committed the government was, because Lincoln, if you will, did a test run by sending a group of Black folk to Cow Island, Haiti. And it was the proverbial utter disaster, and naval vessels had to be sent to rescue them. There were charges of cupidity, skullduggery, and much more. But the idea was that here in the one thing that Lincoln could control, they weren't able to pull off, even on a small scale, the idea of repatriation just to Haiti. We haven't got across the ocean yet. They could not even pull that off successfully.
I want to go back a little bit because I have a question that is kind of bugging me, which is how widespread was slavery in D.C.?
All over the city. Our largest private slave owner, we're not taught to look at the individual people and places, but George Washington Young's plantation, 69, he received compensation for 69 people. Depending upon which calculator you use, it could be as much as $40,000 today. It's about $17,000 and change way back in 1862. Margaret Barber, who had over 30 enslaved folk, the largest woman enslaver in the nation's capital. Her plantation stood where the vice president's mansion is today. And she was able to parlay that money that she got, the compensation, into more land deals and a comfortable existence for her family. So people young, people old, we know of enslavers that in Rock Creek Park, Anne Marie Biscoe, who only two or three, but the fact that she was able to have a comfortable living off of people. In the history by George Henry, who was a Black sea captain and came to DC, he knew the waters of the Patapsco and the Potomac, like, you know, the veins in the back of your hand. He was incensed to see in slavery so wide open in the district, that by the time he had walked down and seen a slave couple, by the time he had walked near the Navy Yard, he says in his history that he would never come back to DC unless he came with an army to take this city and burn it down. So we have that going along alongside the widespread institution of enslavement.
How does this all tie into modern day conversations about reparations? Do you guys think that's relevant, or do you think that's a totally separate thing?
I think they're brought together in terms of the different ways that funds can be used. We ought to understand that we can do this. We can talk about reparations. We've had examples of it before in the United States. DC compensated emancipation can be taught as one example. It can be done. It must be put in its proper historical place and to speak of its relevance even to the 21st century.
When we study this, we have to look for the lessons in it and the relevance to it in terms of today. And I think it's important to note that as Black folk, we have to recognize that even in these moments where things are looking like things being done for us, where things are being done in our favor, you are still taking care of those that set up the oppressive system. So I think that is something else that has to be recognized, mm-hmm. that in as much as, you know, you can celebrate DC emancipation in terms of enslaved folks being set free, this was also an opportunity for these slave owners to cash in as well. So they benefited, I would argue, even, you know, of course, your freedom is everything. But in terms of monetarily, they certainly benefited way more than the very people that built them up to begin with. One of the things that I find interesting about this whole compensated emancipation is that, I guess, like in their final act of freeing these people, they still treated them like property. Mm-hmm. And I really find that problematic, that in the end, you know, we're gonna free you, but our final act will still be to treat you as property. So it's not really freeing a person, it's more like converting them from an item and granting them humanity. And I just find that, you know, very problematic. And when you talk about some of the names, one of the names that I come across was Philip Reed, who was freed under the compensated emancipation, who actually molded the statue that sits above the Capitol. Mm-hmm. So we looked at the value. He was valued at $1,500, okay, back then. So, mm-hmm. you know, when you talk about compensated emancipation, most often you hear the figure $300 thrown out there. It varied. Some owners, because they would proclaim their property to be worth way more, would actually add things to them and so forth in an attempt to get more money. So that final act of freedom for them still treats them like property.
In this conversation about reparations, I know that the loss that Black people of African descent lost during slavery wasn't just monetary. There were also trauma that people faced, violence, a whole bunch of effects that extend far beyond money, and that is generational as well. Should reparations, when we think about this in DC, should it just be something that's monetary, or should we take into account some of the suffering that went on in that period?
One of the things, many things, but one of the things we did not receive after enslavement was counseling. There was nothing that was done to repair the mental damage that was done to African peoples. If you just go to look at the Middle Passage, for example, the same African that got on the ship wasn't the same one that got off, right, even if they survived. And that's never taken into account, the psychological damage. So people always talk about this monetary compensation, to your point, but they're leaving out the fact that if we're talking about reparations, we're talking about repair, because that's what it means. Not only are we repairing the pocketbooks, but we also have to speak to how do we go about repairing the mind.
In the fall of 1838 or 1839, a group of men took a young Black man into a blacksmith shop in D.C. and tortured him. They were looking for information on this thing called the Underground Railroad. The place is filled with tools. The place is filled with hammers and saws and chisels and pokers. And so they put this young man's thumbs in a vise and tortured him. And he played dumb magnificently, because they stopped torture after some period of time, when the only thing he could tell them is that it was a train, he was told, that ran underground. But this is, I'm not talking about Mississippi or Georgia or Alabama. I'm talking about here in the District of Columbia, particularly for those of you who might think that some of the issues we just talked about are too far afield. There's nothing that did not happen in the deepest South that we don't have examples of in Washington, D.C. You may have to look for them, but magnificent resistance, amazing resolve, and stunning brutality. We can all find that in the district prior to D.C. emancipation, and some would say for a long while after that, going all the way down to today. Yes, we got freedom, but it has to be freedom and something else, because when you try to eat a freedom sandwich, you're going to come up lacking. It doesn't heal you, and it doesn't fill you.
That was historian C.R. Gibbs and educator William Jones in the conversation Experiments in Freedom, the Legacy of the D.C. Compensated Emancipation Act. To learn more about the D.C. History Center and their educational resources, visit dchistory.org. For Monday Morning QB, I'm Amara Evering.